Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. I'd like to go ahead and introduce my co-host for the evening. He's a very loyal co-pilot that this show has loved to bring on week in and week out. We're very glad to have him back 2 weeks in a row now, I believe. Memory's not as great as it was in 2017, but in 2018, we're just going to say, for this year anyway, he's 2 for 2. And his name is Bryant Knox. Most of you know him. If you don't, please follow him on Twitter, at Bryant Knox. Bryant, thank you very much for being on. He's a contributing editor for Oregon Sports News. He's also a contributing columnist. He's just a very talented sports individual, and we're very happy to have him on. Bryant, how the hell are you?
I'm good, man. We're batting 1,000 so far for the year. Two for two. I'm not a baseball guy, but I'm pretty sure batting 1,000 is a good thing.
It's so got to be pretty good. You know, I think that's a Hall of Fame number. If you want to get in, that's a pretty good way to get there.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
Not bad. You know, nobody gets in unanimously. You know, even Junior, or the kid, as some people like to call him, couldn't get in. Babe Ruth couldn't get in unanimously. So even if you bat 1,000, doesn't mean you're for sure getting on everybody's ballot. So don't hold it against yourself if you don't get in anyway.
All right, that's fair.
Well, we wanted to go ahead and talk to you about some local news to start out. And before the show, in our formal pre-show meeting where we wear tuxedos and top hats and swirl the brandy around our glass and talk about how well this company is doing and that we don't need free money, so please stop sending it in. We're sick of it. You wanted to talk about a tie-in to the national championship game that maybe some people aren't aware of. And, you know, I'll just let you take the lead on that. What do you think about that? And what are your thoughts on this tie-in? How does Oregon fit into the national championship game? They didn't even play.
Well, yeah, there's a main reason they didn't play. And the main reason they didn't play is because Mark Helfrich, during his time at Oregon, failed to recruit successfully. He had a solid two-year run his first two seasons on the coattails of Chip Kelly, and also the offense was looking good. But throughout his time there, it became very clear that he was not able to recruit the same way that Chip Kelly was. Now, Chip Kelly was in a completely different class when it came to that. I know Chip Kelly spoke about how he doesn't enjoy the recruiting process, but the fact is he was pretty damn good at it. And so that's not a bad thing to be good at, and Oregon fans learned that pretty quickly. Now, the tie-in, of course, first of all, Alabama just knows how to get it done. I mean, Nick Saban is the Bill Belichick. He is the Greg Popovich. He is the staple lead man for a team in his sport. And, you know, props to them for being able to put up a fight in the second half that a lot of people didn't think they were capable of. I know I personally didn't think they even belonged in the college football playoffs because of their schedule and because of the way they dropped the ball at the end of the year. But, you know, props to them and Nick Saban for just finding a way to get it done yet again. But where this has some sort of vested interest for the local folks here in Portland and Oregon and the Pacific Northwest is that, in case you missed it, you know, hashtag ICYMI, the kid who ended up getting the second half start, I don't know completely honestly how to pronounce his last name. Tagovailoa, maybe, something like that. All I know is that his first name is Tua, as in he should have gone to another school. Mark Helfrich was to offer him a scholarship. Thank you. Mark Helfrich was late to offer him a scholarship. Tua had gone to the same high school as Marcus Mariota. He said publicly, the Oregon Ducks are my dream school, and they just didn't get a scholarship to him in time, so he ended up at Alabama. Now, what is maybe even more frustrating for Oregon fans and for fans all across the country is that, I can't remember who said it, but somebody came out from ESPN, I believe, and said that if Tua had not been put into the game during the second half, he would have for sure transferred schools. Of course, there's no way of saying where he would have transferred to. Would he have gone to Oregon? Probably not, just because brand new system. They have quarterbacks lined up. I don't know how great they are, but they have them at this point.
He probably would have wound up at UCLA. That's my guess.
You know what? With Rosen going pro, he very well could have. So all I know is that this kid came out with incredible Mariota-like composure, made plays with his feet, made play, plays through the air, did an incredible job, and any Oregon fan who knew what they were watching and what could have been on their team was definitely watching with sort of a, you know, this is exciting to watch, but I'm also pretty frustrated seeing it in Alabama, because that is the last place you want to see an Oregon recruit who said Oregon is his dream school wind up.
And you're going to see it for the next, what, 2-3 years? He's a true freshman, so this isn't, you know, the short version of the story. This is going to be a long haul for Oregon fans, so you're going to have to hope that you're up to snuff in the time that he's in school, because if you're not, then you have to wait for him to graduate just so you can get up to snuff.
For sure. And you also don't want to put the pressure on the kid to say all of a sudden he is the next Alabama legend, because I think that you can set yourself, and more importantly, you can set him up for failure doing that.
Right.
But I do think that he has an incredible start to his legacy, however it ends up. And yeah, you're going to be watching him in one of the most prominent college football programs for the next couple seasons.
Well, and how bad do you feel for Alabama's previous starting quarterback? I'm blanking on his name, but he lost last year in dramatic fashion to Clemson, and now he was basically losing, getting shut out in the national championship game this year. And who knows? If I were him, I would transfer, but you never know. You know, you're only ever an injury away from getting the starting job back, but you know, you have a pretty solid year, 2 years in a row, and you look like you're going to be one of the top prospects going into next season, and now you may not even have a starting job in Division I football.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. His name is Jalen Hurts, I read a couple articles on him today, and they all said the same thing. The sentiment was basically that his worst nightmare turned into his finest moment, because he was the humblest of kids in that situation. He was seen on the sidelines cheering on his, you know, previously backup quarterback, now his replacement. And after the game, you know, I get as a member of the media that you do your job and you go out there and you get interviews with the people who people are talking about the most. I did disagree with the national broadcast instantly interviewing him in the second half. I thought that that was not necessarily the appropriate move, but you know what? Jalen Hurts came out and he said all the right things. He looked as genuinely happy as you would, even more than you would expect him to in that situation. And the truth is, like you said, you're an injury away, but there's also recent precedent that these quarterback situations can be fluid. I mean, you look at Ohio State. At one point, they had 3 elite quarterbacks on their roster, coming off a national championship. And so they, not to say they've all, you know, gone on to find immense success, but I think that you can find a way, as much as it hurts right now, get it? As much as it hurts right now,
sure.
He still has, that's my second Alabama player pun of the day. So I'll leave it at
that. 2 for 2 yet again.
Yeah.
But, bad in 1,000.
He has a long road ahead of him, but that's a good thing. You know, at this point, you don't want that short road that says, okay, your time is over. I will say he has to refine his throwing techniques. He has to become a more precise passer if that's the route he wants to go. But it's not a terrible situation he's in, even if it's not ideal at the moment.
Well, and he looks like a Russell Wilson clone. He looks like he's built like a truck. He's got a good arm. He does need to work on his accuracy, but you can tell even as a freshman, he's just a true leader out there. Doesn't get fazed by the moment. Definitely not too small for the moment, even though he's small by normal standards. But he looks like he's going to be the real deal. I mean, this is just one half of film we've got on him in NCAA football. But we like what we see so far. Let's hope that he doesn't destroy Oregon's chances in the next couple of years. It'd be nice if he went into the competition next season and lost it, then transferred to Oregon. That'd be pretty neat.
I don't think too many people around here would complain.
Probably not. It'd be a nice 2 years, 2 to 3 years of really solid quarterback play. So moving on to pro football, we talked a little about this last week and we forgot to mention it, you know, quote unquote forgot to say goodbye to our NFL teams from this year. And Bryant is much more of a sad NFL fan than I am, so I'll let him go second because he'll need to really choose his words carefully because he's got to say goodbye to the Miami Dolphins and just say he's been saying goodbye to them every year for a long time. But I am, you know, I'm spoiled. I'm a Green Bay Packer fan. I've had Brett Favre, then Aaron Rodgers, then some more Aaron Rodgers, and yet some more Aaron Rodgers. It's been pretty great since 1992. And there haven't been a whole lot of no postseason seasons, but this was one of them. And so I'll just say that I'm glad they've shook up the front office and they've shook up the coaching staff, and they're looking at getting a more deep and talented team. But for God's sake, this is a terrible season. It really showed how crappy their depth was and how bad their backup plans were, and that they really didn't have any, that it was Rodgers or bust. Well, he got busted, they got busted, everything got busted. It was a whole disaster. They didn't deserve to play the game this year. That's how bad they were. They shouldn't have been on the field. They were despicable. They gave up too many points. They couldn't score. They looked below average. It was disgusting. They came within an overtime game of almost losing to the Browns. That's how bad this was. And I'm just going to say goodbye to the 2017 Green Bay Packers. It was not over too soon. It took forever, and it was a struggle every week to support you, but I still did. Every week I watched, and every week I wondered, how in the world is Brent Hundley an NFL quarterback? But there he is. So anyway, goodbye 2017 Green Bay Packers. See you next year, and I hope to God Minnesota does not win the Super Bowl on their own turf. Moving on to Bryant.
Oh, did Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have one bad season, Casey?
It's the second one of his career, you know, not to bring up technicalities or anything, but it's two now. So that's twice we haven't made the playoffs while he's been a pro. I'm just going to bring it up. I'm just going to say it.
Oh, that sounds rough. You know,
you don't know what it's like, Bryant, to not make the playoffs. You don't,
you know what?
I don't expect you to understand.
Like, growing up a Dan Marino fan has made watching the Dolphins of late especially rough. It'd be one thing if I was, you know, born in the year 2002 and had only seen two playoff appearances in my entire lifetime. But the fact that I grew up watching Dan Marino sitting on the couch right next to my dad, who was the biggest Marino fan, so I got that from him. You know, I am also bidding adieu to 2017, because while I didn't expect anything great, I will fully admit that I had some closet high hopes for Jay Cutler.
I think we all did.
Just because, yeah, and I don't think that was unfair. I think that we all knew who Jay Cutler was coming in, right? We knew that we weren't going to get a passionate quarterback who was ready to lead a team to a Super Bowl because it was his last real shot to do so. We got a guy who got bribed essentially for double-digit millions to come out of a cushy broadcasting job and play one season for a team that desperately needed him.
I believe you and I both offered to do it for less. So,
you know, I would have definitely done it for less. So the Dolphins clearly didn't get our.
They must have missed our emails. They must have.
They must have. That was the one episode that they missed.
Yeah.
of this podcast. So that's unfortunate that they missed that one. But, you know, like I said, I wasn't expecting greatness. I just quietly, in a closet fashion, was hoping that they'd be able to put something together. But, I mean, in true Jay Cutler fashion, he was as apathetic as I would have expected him to be. The team dropped something like three or four straight to end the year, and they did get a win over New England, which I enjoyed.
It's a lot like twisting the knife, though, isn't it? Because they beat them, and they just show you how good they could have been if they were good all year.
It is, but I'm so used to that, because it seems like they get one win at home against New England every year.
Right.
They could win four games, or they could lose four games in a row, both going into and
all to the Browns,
exiting that game, all to the Browns. But they will find a way to get one weird win at home against the Patriots at least once every 2 years, if not every year. So I feel vindicated in that sense. But just like you, I am tossing this season aside and bidding it adieu one last time.
Well, goodbye to the 2017 Green Bay Packers. Goodbye to the 2017 Miami Dolphins. We will not miss you. You're out of our lives, and we're grateful. So now on to some happy franchises. We had some playoff games last week, and you did better than I did, but neither of us did very well. You hit 500, so in life you're batting 1,000, in playoff picks you're batting 500. I went 1-3. I picked the Chiefs to beat the Titans. That didn't go so well. You had the same pick, I believe, but we both miffed on that one. I believe you were cheering for Mariota more than I was in that one. I mean, I still wanted him to win, but you actually gave him a chance, and I didn't. So you probably saw something I didn't see.
You know, the only thing I saw was that Mariota was playing well in spite of his lack of depth on the Titans.
Right.
And I saw that and I liked it. I also saw that Alex Smith had thrown all of his interceptions during the second half of the season. And I saw that, you know, Alex Smith gets that backhanded compliment of game manager year after year.
Right.
But in reality, he not only is he better than that label, but he plays in a way that label's not the worst thing in the world.
Sure.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
But what I saw from him was that during the season, he did not have as much momentum in the second half as he did in the first. And so I liked Mariota and the Titans, but I'm not going to sit here and claim I thought they were going to win. I thought that it would ultimately come down to the high risk, high reward of Mariota versus the steady game manager, if you want to say that, of Alex Smith. And I thought that Smith would pull off the win. So I do not claim to be correct there, but I did like what Mariota had going for him in the weeks prior.
Well, I mean, you picked the Chiefs, so we're not accusing you of picking the Titans. Don't worry about that. You know, we know that you saw reason and we appreciated that. But then you picked rightly Jacksonville to beat Buffalo. We both picked that. That ended up being a much tighter game than I think we saw coming, but it was still a good game. We both thought the Rams would beat Atlanta. That did not happen.
I had trust in the Rams.
A lot of people had trust in the Rams. I think anyone other than Atlanta trusted the Rams.
Here's the problem, though. After the game was over, my initial thought was, why did I doubt Matt Ryan and why did I doubt the Falcons? But as I looked at the game stat, the box scores and the highlights a little bit closer, because I watched a good portion of that game, but not all the way through. But what I saw in hindsight was less about why didn't I trust the Falcons and more why did I trust the Rams. The Rams have come along pretty quickly and good for them, but the steadiness of the Falcons got to them, and I just think that, and you know, obviously hindsight's 2020 or any other cliche you want to throw out there about it, but I think that in hindsight I did not like the Rams as much as I liked them more than I should have.
Right. Well, and you know, you go back and look at the 2008 and 2009 Green Bay Packers, I don't think you see a world of difference between those teams and how they fared versus this year's Rams team and last year's. Definitely the Rams had a huge turnaround that Green Bay did not. They went from 6-10 to 9-7 with a wild card berth, or I think it was 10-6, and won their division and had one of the most exciting playoff games of all time against the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And the next year they went on a tear and won the Super Bowl. So I could see the Rams doing that. I don't know that it was necessarily you shouldn't have trusted the Rams. I think they peaked a year too soon. And this was a team that has a ton of young talent on it. They're awesome players, but they don't have really much playoff experience. They have a rookie head coach. You know, I don't know what the heck happened to Wade Phillips' defense. That looked, you know, they held it together, but they didn't really shut down the Falcons, which is surprising. And on the flip side, Todd Gurley just could not get an explosive play going until the fourth quarter. Jared Goff looked just out of sorts for most of the game. The receivers should have been open because the Falcons were keying on the Rams' running game and Todd Gurley, but for whatever reason, they were struggling to beat single coverage. It just seemed like Dan Quinn had Sean McVay figured out, which is bizarre because Sean McVay had everybody else figured out most of the year. And then this week and last week, it seemed like Dan Quinn's had the number of the other coaches, which has not been the norm the rest of the year. The Falcons have looked average at best, and you know, Steve Sarkisian calling a good game in his old home stadium before he was unceremoniously fired for all the right reasons. It was odd. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming. And I think part of it was that we were blinded by how good the Rams looked all year, and we kind of overlooked their some of their wins were average, and some of them were blowouts of really average teams, and they didn't really beat any great teams. They struggled against Philadelphia. They struggled against Minnesota. You know, that's just to name a couple. They struggled against New Orleans. They, you know, it seems like they played down to their level of talent that was coming against them. And unfortunately, in this case, they had a very winnable game and just blew it. And even some of the Rams officials have come out and said that it was a fair game, but they think that when they're in their home stadium, it'll be better because they'll have a real home field advantage. I sit there and go, you're in the same stadium you've played in this entire year and all of last year. I guess I'm confused. What makes a home stadium then?
Well, you nailed it on the head, because there's no reason they should be lacking a home field advantage at this point.
No.
You know, I think you also hit it on the head when you said that they peaked a year too soon. Obviously, nobody in LA, if they bothered to show up to the game, is going to care that they peaked a year too soon, because that's a good problem to have.
Right.
But I think that they were a year away from being where they are now, and they just escalated that, which good for them for doing. They just, I think, fooled a bunch of us into thinking they were ready a year sooner. But yeah, as far as the home field advantage is concerned, that's, you know, anybody claiming that, you were supposed to get the home field advantage in year three. No, that's ridiculous.
Right.
The fact that they can't figure that out. And, you know, to LA's credit, it has a lot of other entertainment options. So I guess there's that excuse, but I'm not buying it. I think if they have a problem in year three, they have a real problem. So we'll figure out where that goes.
Well, you know, the Lakers could go play any basketball stadium in the world and they'll have home field advantage. So I have a hard time believing that the actual address of the stadium is what mattered or who owned it. I don't think that's an issue. I think it's that, you know, that you have fair weather fans and a lot of them because you're technically a new team to the area. That would have been a more fair statement. Saying that you don't have a home field advantage because you're not in your own stadium, that's a little issue for me, because I don't see the LA faithful selling out that stadium every year when they're struggling just because they're in their own home stadium.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, the Lakers could host a game against you, me, and three other OSN contributors, and they would still sell out. So yeah. It is, that's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. The other game that we had where you and I actually picked opposite teams and you were correct, which is how you got the extra win, is I had Carolina beating New Orleans. I didn't realize that Cam Newton was going to get a concussion and try to play through it. I didn't know that was allowed. I thought we had outlawed that. But he still had a shot to win the game and blew it. New Orleans got the win. They're moving on to this week. And that was it for last week. And then now we turn into this week. So, but again, congratulations, by the way. You beat me 2-1, or 2-2 to 1-3. Going into this week, though, we have some interesting games, I suppose. Maybe your interest level is a little higher than mine. I look at these matchups and I'm not really sure I care who wins. But let's start out with the AFC. You have the Titans at number 6 traveling to number 1 New England, and the Patriots are favored by 13.5. That's today, being Tuesday. Obviously, that could change before Saturday, but I would assume they're a multiple score favorite no matter how you slice it. Who do you like in that game, and who are you picking?
Well, I like the Patriots for all of the obvious reasons. There's really no reason on paper to pick against Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Corporation over, you know, Mariota and the Titans. What I'm more interested in at this point is that 12.5 point spread, because, or what was it, 13.5?
13.5.
Yeah, 13.5. If that spread holds going into the game, it will be tied with 7 other spreads in NFL playoff history for the 12th highest spread of all time. Hmm. Now, that's also only half a point away from the 6th highest of all time. So even though it may not seem that drastic because it is the Patriots versus the inexperienced Titans, that's an astronomical spread. So do I think that the Patriots will win straight up? Yes, of course I do. There, like I said, there's no reason on paper not to. But as far as the spread goes, I'm tempted to pick the Titans really just because historically this is a pretty extreme spread. Now, for anybody who's looking at this game through a Titans lens and saying, what do we have to do to win? The obvious answer is attack that somewhat vulnerable pass defense of the Patriots. I think that if you can do that, you're going to stand a chance. The problem is Mariota does not have any true go-to weapons, either in the slot or in his wideouts. And he's not going to throw every touchdown to himself. I know he did that once already this playoff.
He could do it six more times. You never know.
He's not going to put up 30 points on his own against the Patriots. So I'm very torn on if the 13.5 is so extreme that the Titans can keep it within a touchdown, 10 points. But I also think it's not unrealistic because they lack those weapons on the outside. And that really is New England's only true Achilles heel, if you want to call it that, on defense. So I hate to say it because I'm an Oregon guy, I'm a Mariota guy, but I think you probably end up with something like 30 to 20 at best, maybe even 34-17 New England.
I've just seen Tom Brady and the Patriots dismantle so many young playoff teams in the past that I'm not sure who to trust in this one because, you know, you see what they've done to some of the better quarterbacks in NFL recent history, and it's just disgusting what they've been able to accomplish. Now, granted, they have always had an average defense, or at least above average. This year, it's just putrid, as you alluded to, whereas they still have a great passing game. They've got Rob Gronkowski, they've got Brandon Cooks, they've got... they don't have Julian Edelman, but they do have Danny Amendola, and they do have Chris Hogan. They have a pretty good mixture of receivers to get the ball to. Then you've got James White, and you've got Deion Lewis. You've got some options. You have Mike Gillislee. They have so many different chess pieces they can throw at you, and I just feel like that's going to be too much for this Titans defense to overcome. Now, this is, you know, the Patriots struggled in the last few weeks, and part of that's because Brady has just been kind of a hothead, but that's the story of his career. Usually he's getting amped up and winning. He's still been winning, but he's been struggling to win. And so I think if you can watch some of those last few weeks that they've had where he struggled some against Miami, against Pittsburgh, and a couple other teams, you can maybe pick him apart a little bit and get some key interceptions or fumbles. You know, if you can pressure him, he's definitely not as mobile as, you know, he's never been accused of being a mobile quarterback, but he's less mobile now than he ever was. And that line has some holes on it, so you could really get to him. You could maybe force him into some throws that are picked off or overthrown or turn him into fumbles if you can hit him before he throws. I think that's how Tennessee has to attack this. They have to be super aggressive if they want to have any shot of competing in this game. They've got to be aggressive on offense. They've got to run Derrick Henry down the Patriots' throats. They've got to open Mariota up with the no-huddle offense. That's the way they're going to win, and then be super aggressive on defense. If they can do that, I see them being either competitive or even potentially able to pull off the upset. If they are stagnant on either side of the ball or just play safe, I don't see them holding on very long.
You're not wrong. Everything you said there is completely right, but I'm just going to counter with one point. I think no matter how aggressive the Titans are on defense, the Patriots are going to get what they want on offense. I think I really, really believe that the Titans could choose to either all-out blitz every single play or run a prevent defense every single play, the two most extreme opposites, and the Patriots are still going to score 34 points potentially. Right. 34 to 37 points, which to me indicates the only way the Titans make this a game is if they can turn it into a shootout. And that's going to mean using Derrick Henry to open up the passing game, which then you just have to trust your receivers, which have been not the most trustworthy throughout the year.
Right.
So again, I don't think that necessarily happens, but I do think if this is a close game, it's not going to have anything to do with what the Titans did on defense. It's going to have to do with what they did in their deep ball game and whether or not Mariota was able to convert on those deep passes and make this a 37-34 shootout, something like that.
Yeah, and if he can get Delanie Walker and Rishard Matthews and Eric Decker and Corey Davis going, this could be one heck of a ball game. I think the Patriots are going to do what they can to take away Delanie Walker and Eric Decker and force Mariota to beat them with Corey Davis and Rishard Matthews, which I don't think he can do. I don't think they expect him to either. And if that happens, this could be a massive turnover-prone game the way Andrew Luck had his first couple of times playing the Patriots in the playoffs. And it could be just a blowout from the opening whistle.
Yeah, like I said, I think New England scores probably 34 to 37 points regardless.
Right.
And then it just comes down to, does Tennessee score 20 points? Do they score 34 points? That's what it's going to come down to for me.
I'll take the Patriots, and I'm going to take them to cover the spread.
I'll take the Pats, and yeah, I'm going to take the spread also.
Okay, we'll count the picks when we talk next week, but just for fun, for tiebreaker's sake, we'll talk, you know, do we take the spread or not?
There we go.
So then the next AFC game, you have number 3 Jacksonville traveling to number 2 Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, I haven't seen officially yet or not if Antonio Brown's going to play. Even if he does, I would assume that they're going to rest him as much as possible to keep him fresh. I think they can beat Jacksonville with or without him. They have the receiving talent. Jacksonville's secondary is, we'll just say, scary with Jalen Ramsey and the other guy whose name I don't want to insult by trying to pronounce, but I believe it's Bouye. And their front 7 is just ridiculous. But Pittsburgh has such a great offense with Le'Veon Bell. And whether or not Brown's there, they still have Martavius Bryant and Juju Smith-Schuster and Eli Rogers. Just a bevy of pass catchers that can get it done. They've got a great ground game. They've got a decent defense. You know, Joe Hayden's back and healthy. That'll definitely help to shut down some of the Jacksonville passing attack. They'll have their hands full with Leonard Fournette and Chris Ivory, but I think they can do it. I'm taking the Steelers. They're favored by 6.5. I think they can cover a touchdown, so I'll take the Steelers and the points. What's your take, Bryant?
This is pretty much a classic matchup of an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, because you have a great defense. You have the I'll throw my third pun of the day out here. You have the Saxonville Jaguars.
3 for 3.
3 for 3. You have them going up against the Steelers, who, you know, it really truly is a great offense versus a great defense. I really, really want to like Jacksonville in this game, because the last time we saw these two face off, Big Ben threw 5 interceptions, which is just a ridiculous number.
And he was talking about retiring after that game. You remember that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I do.
That seems like eons ago. That was this season.
Yeah, I don't know if you're a sports gambling man or not, but some of the more prominent sports gambling sports books out there were actually taking bets on whether or not Ben Roethlisberger was going to retire after the season and if he would ever play another game in a Steelers uniform because of that game and the way that that narrative played out. Now,
right.
Here's the thing. You have to look at that particular game and know a couple things. First of all, the 5 interceptions is an absolute anomaly. That's not going to happen again. It's just not. But you also have to understand that Jacksonville's offense was not responsible for 14 of the points in that game. 2 of those interceptions out of the 5 were returned for touchdowns.
Right.
I just, as much as I like and want to like Jacksonville's defense, I can't trust their offense. I like that Blake Bortles can make plays when he's not throwing well, which is, you know, you want to talk about batting 1,000. but you need more than a quarterback who can run for 6 yards every now and again to make something happen when you're playing at this point in the season. And so right. I also like Pittsburgh. I think the defense for Jacksonville is going to show up. But unless they can put together literally another anomaly, which is almost an oxymoron when you say that phrase out loud, so I don't think you can buy into that. Gotta go Pittsburgh. I'm taking Pittsburgh on the spread because I think that they're going to be able to put up points, whereas Jacksonville is not. And so that's where I stand.
And they had, Jacksonville had so much trouble putting away Buffalo last week. Maybe it was nerves. Maybe it was just Buffalo's better than we all think they are, which I don't really think that's true, but, you know, who knows?
A team that scores 3 points in a playoff game is not better than we think they are.
I just wanted to give them due credit because my team couldn't even make the playoffs. So I thought, you know, maybe they know something. But I don't, you know, fair. Buffalo's awful. We'll just come out and say it. And Jacksonville should have obliterated them. They did not. They only won by 7, which was despicable. I don't like their chances in Pittsburgh this weekend. I think it's Pittsburgh plus the points, no brainer.
Yeah.
So moving on to the NFC, you have the reigning NFC champion and Super Bowl runner-up. I enjoy saying that. They were the Super Bowl runner-up Atlanta Falcons traveling to number one Philadelphia. The spread's actually, the Falcons are the underdog by 2.5. Obviously, that number would be much higher if Carson Wentz is playing. He's not. He's nursing a knee injury. He's out for the season. Nick Foles is in at quarterback. I don't like what I see from Nick Foles so far this year. He had one good game and 3 lousy games. I'm actually going to take the Falcons, and they'll beat the spread. I think even if the Falcons play poorly and the Eagles play great, I think the Falcons can still keep themselves in this game on defense, and the weather could be a concern, which I think is only going to hurt Philadelphia because Foles plays terrible in cold weather or bad weather, whereas Ryan has shown that he's capable of doing it in both. I'm going to take the Falcons. I'm going to take them to beat the spread. What's your pick?
This is a tough one for me. You know, the Falcons have their postseason experience to thank for being literally the only road favorite of the divisional round. Matt Ryan, he represented the NFC in the Super Bowl a year ago, and while he only had a single touchdown last game, I don't think you can count him out. But the Eagles, as you mentioned, without Carson Wentz, have had a problem. They ever since he went down with that ACL injury, early December, I can't remember exactly how long ago it was, as you alluded to earlier, this season seems like it's gone on forever.
It has.
But they, despite the fact that they have not looked great without him, this is a decent matchup for them. The Falcons gave up 100-yard rushing and receiving totals to, you know, both Todd Gurley and Robert Woods, respectively, last week. Even in the loss, they're going to probably face some difficulty against Jay Ajayi, one of my previous Dolphins guys, because Ajayi hasn't even played since week 16. So that's like the perfect amount of time for without rust, if that makes any sense.
Right.
So I'm definitely torn on this one, but I'm going to give it to the Eagles in a 3-6 point game. I'm going to give them something like 23-20 or 26-23 or maybe even 30-23, but I'm going Eagles on this one.
So it's supposed to be 32 degrees when they play this game. That's the high that day. I would expect Nick Foles to struggle in that weather. Matt Ryan might also, but you know, he's a Boston guy. His name's Matty Ice. Does that change your answer at all?
Yeah, but he's been Atlanta for a long time now.
It's true.
So I'm still buying Philly on this one. Yeah, I'm not confident about it, as I think I made clear, but I'm definitely going Philly between 3-6 points.
Fair enough. And then the last game is the Saints taking on the Vikings in Minnesota. Minnesota is favored by 4 points. I'm going to take the Vikings. I think this will be a close game. I think it could be a field goal game. I'm actually going to take the Vikings. I'm going to not take the points. I think they'll lose to the spread. So I like the Vikings. I think they've got a really good defense. I think New Orleans is really good. I think they've got a good defense. I give the running game edge to New Orleans. I give the passing game edge to New Orleans. But I give the defensive presence to Minnesota, the home field presence to Minnesota. And I just think Drew Brees is more turnover prone than Case Keenum is. So I'm going to say Minnesota wins this one, but it's a tight contest, and I think it's a field goal game, so I think the 4 points is too high. What are your thoughts?
This is one of those games where when I was trying to figure out who I was going to pick, I looked at their week one matchup. But I realized pretty quickly that it's really not the best example of these two teams, because the Saints hadn't quite, well, hadn't at all established a two-man running game. They still had Adrian Peterson, who turned out to be a flop for them. The Vikings defense wasn't quite as established, as evidenced by the fact that they gave up nearly 300 yards to Drew Brees.
They started Sam Bradford, totally different there.
Yeah, like there's just so many reasons not to look into that game, which I realized pretty quickly.
Right.
And so thinking about current events and recent trends, my heart really wants to go with the Saints, because I saw that Drew Brees really did, you know, Drew Brees didn't put up the best like statistical game, but I like what he was able to do, and they do have that two-man attack in the backfield, which I just am enthralled with. I love watching them play.
Yeah.
Kamara was one of the better value picks of the draft, clearly, but I just have to believe that the Vikings defense is real. And as much as an X factor as Case Keenum is, I think that the defense will make up for it. So I'm picking the Vikings, but just like you, I'm picking them in a close game, because I think Minnesota can make this game a slog. You know, I think that if it does become a shootout, that's when New Orleans becomes the easy 7 to 10 point favorite.
Right.
But as long as Minnesota can make this game their own game, by about a field goal.
Well, and that's so we differ on the Falcons and Eagles, but we're pretty much across the board in agreement. So we'll see what happens this weekend, and we'll have to chat again next week. But before I let you go, I want to check in with you on the Blazers. They got a pretty important win tonight over Oklahoma City, which I believe puts them at, what, 4-1 since the start of January, which is pretty nice. It's definitely the right start to the new year. So they've been on a little bit of a hot streak this year, we can finally say now. What are your thoughts on them and their current streak, and are they doing what you think they ought to be doing, or are there any changes? You know, the trade deadline's coming up. Any moves you'd like to see? What are your quick takes on them?
I don't know if there's anything I'd like to see from them in terms of player personnel changes. You know, Portland's probably in a hold situation. You don't want to sell, because you're not hoping to be a lottery team. But you also don't want to buy, because there's no reason for you to go necessarily, you know, quote unquote, all in when the Warriors and Rockets are as dominant as they are. So I think you'll probably see them hold at the deadline, but what I wouldn't mind seeing, and what I think is a definite possibility, is them looking to move some of the guys who might cost them in the next year or two. You know, you have an Ed Davis who is finally healthy after his issues last year, and he's playing very, very well and very consistently well, but the problem is he's in a contract year and is going to command much bigger money than what he's making right now. So if you can package him with either a young asset like a Mo Harkless or a couple draft picks, you can get somebody who's going to be valuable for your rotation the next couple years without having to worry about paying them double-digit millions. Now, is there a guy out there? Maybe, maybe not. The one guy I have my eye on right now is Nikola Mirotic from Chicago.
Right.
He has literally turned the Chicago Bulls around when they didn't want to be turned around. They were projecting for a top three draft pick. It was the perfect scenario for a rebuilding roster that just got rid of Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler and so many other role players. And all of a sudden he came back from his, again, I put in quotes, injury, because he got knocked out and concussed by a teammate. But he came back and has actually made them somewhat of a winning, if not middling, 500 program, that he could be a valuable asset to Portland if they can swap a couple of their pieces in the depth department to improve at the four spot. Now, as for where they are right now, they're sitting fifth after the win on Tuesday against OKC, which is really big for them because I don't expect them to, you know, really ever enter the conversation of top four, meaning home court advantage in the first round. But if they can avoid slipping and stay ahead of the OKCs, the New Orleans, the Clippers of the Western Conference, that's going to be huge for them because then they could potentially end up with a matchup against, let's say, a four seed Minnesota Timberwolves, which Minnesota is the far more talented squad, but they struggle on defense where Portland has actually turned it around this year. And when it comes to the playoffs, that's traditionally what's going to win you games. And obviously teams like the Warriors have proven you can be a jump shooting squad and win a title, but they've also been historically great on defense as well. So I think Portland can actually match up pretty well against somebody in that 4-5 set if they're able to maintain what they're doing right now, which, like you said, they're 4-1 since the new year. That's exactly what they need to do. Damian Lillard isn't even playing right now, so hopefully getting him back helps them only propel even higher.
So they beat San Antonio on Sunday. They beat Oklahoma City on Tuesday. They've got the Rockets on Wednesday. Do you expect to see them beat Houston, or do you think this is where the streak ends?
No, Houston will be where it ends. You know, barring some sort of brilliant performance again from a Shabazz Napier, or more realistically, a terrible showing from one of Houston's, you know, role to semi-star players. They're without James Harden right now, so it's not as if they have both of their Hall of Fame guards in the lineup, but they still have a very reasonable replacement in Eric Gordon. So like I said, barring some sort of, you know, terrible, terrible showing from Eric Gordon or Gerald Green finally coming back down to earth. That dude was unemployed 2 weeks ago, and now he's averaging 20 points a game for the Rockets. So they have too much firepower for me to believe they will have that drop off. So Portland will probably take a very reasonable and expected loss on Wednesday and then get back at it afterward.
Well, that's Bryant Knox's take on the Blazers. If you want to check in with him, please do so. He's at Bryant Knox on Twitter. You can also check us both out on OregonSportsNews.com. Check out everybody on OregonSportsNews.com, by the way. We've got a ton of great writers, podcasts, you name it. We've got people covering everything from sports, fitness, hiking, biking, anything Northwest related. It's covered on that site, so please check it out. Bryant, thank you so much for being on. We're over the time limit, so we got to get going, but really appreciate you being on the show tonight. And we definitely look forward to talking more sports with you next week if you're available. But we'll take you any week we can get you. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks, man. I look forward to coming back next week when I'm up 2 games on you in our playoff picks.
As long as it's only 2. You know, knowing you, you'll find some way to get a 3rd win even though we picked the other games the same. But, you know, you're very talented. I know you'll find a way. All right, well, we're checking out, so thank you for checking us out. And check out Oregon Sports News. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. Thank you, and stay classy, Portland.